That's me.
Want that takeaway?
Two spring rolls, Indonesian stir fry, udon noodles. Already called it in.
Way to go, Swain Rooney!
Insubordination, PC Tinker.
Hey, do you know, someone once wrote OCID on my locker 2 years ago.
That's different. You should have reported it.
Yeah, well, I wiped it off. Banter.
If I had a pound for every time I heard Swain's World or Totally Excellent.
The talk of the street.
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 And welcome to episode 297 of The Talk of the Street, an unofficial Coronation Street catch-up podcast that can't imagine that this transistor wireless radio thing is ever going to catch on. I'm Gavin.
And Auction Talk is back, bitches.
It was back last week.
Did I say that last week? But yes. It's really back now.
Auction Talk.
None of my new co-workers talk like that.
Not that you know of.
They're all women.
They do when you're not there.
And it's delightful.
How's it going?
Yes!
This is your first week.
My first week is done.
Back in the saddle.
I'm back. Back again.
Back once again like the Renegade Master?
That's right.
Superb.
Back.
In the USSR?
That too.
Back for good?
Yes. Enough.
Baby got back?
No. If there's one thing this baby does not have, it's back.
Yeah. I've got the back in this family.
You do. You anyway, do. That is a bodacious butt.
How is the new gig then?
It's great. It's great. It's so nice. Everybody is so nice. I had like all of this stuff sent to me before I even stepped through the door so that I could just basically start. Almost immediately.
I've told people about this at my work because we've hired somebody like 9 weeks ago who still doesn't have access to all the systems that they need.
I remember those days.
Yeah.
Not fondly.
When I started work here, I had access to MS Project and that was it. Nobody knows what MS Project is.
No. Does anybody ever use MS Project for anything?
Didn't have email, didn't have Excel, didn't have Word, but I had MS Project. Anyway.
No, there you go.
So this, you got your systems all set up.
Right. And everything.
Loaded with the Auction Talk theme tune.
Right. Yep. And so I was able to just go right in, pick up some 45s, and start cataloging. Including an elf one.
The alien life form?
Yes. The alien life form. He released a couple of 45s back in the day. Oh,
good God. That suggests there was maybe an album.
No, I don't think so. I think they came like on cereal boxes. I think it was like that sort of thing.
Like flexi discs?
Yeah. Yeah. They were like on the front of cereal boxes. It was probably a Kellogg's thing.
I have heard tell.
Yes.
That you even have a window.
I do.
Wow.
I have a window. Initially, I was in this room with the other catalogers, and it was very small. We're in the basement of this building and very enclosed, but it had like exposed beams and stuff.
Mm.
And she keeps the door closed because right across the way is the barber shop that rents space in the building, and they play very loud music.
Barbers do?
Yeah. These are those young hipster type barbers.
Oh, hipster barbers.
Hipster right. Barbers. Yeah. And I was like, but I cracked the door for a little bit and she came in and she's like, oh, I keep the door shut because of the barbers. And I said,
that's the quote of the week.
And I said, yeah, but you know, it was feeling very warm and enclosed in here. And I was starting to feel really claustrophobic and anxious and started to get really queasy.
Oh, Helen's complaining already.
And so she's like, okay, no problem. You can just move next door. It's a bigger room. It's a bigger space. And there's a window.
And no barbers.
And well, it's actually, funnily enough, closer to the barbers. But I don't mind the barbers, and I can keep the door shut in that room because I have a window.
You got a window.
I've got a window. And the ceiling is enclosed. So no exposed like pipes and stuff over my head.
Just hipster barbers hanging about outside your door, sharpening their razors.
Meanwhile,
playing dice.
Meanwhile, I get to enjoy the company of Alf and Jonathan Richman and Bob Dylan. Bob Hope as well. I was cataloging this like collection of Golden Age of Hollywood promotional photographs of people, including Bob Hope, someone that we talk an awful lot about this season on the List of Lists.
Please check out the List of Lists podcast.
It's our other podcast. You should listen to it. It's great.
There's no auction talk in that one, though.
No.
I'm not trying to put you off it.
No.
But if you want to hear what Helen and I think about movies and pop culture,
yes,
check it out.
Yes. And about Canadian actors pretending to be Welsh.
Too many of them.
And then English. Oh, but very never good. Canadian.
Well, I'm glad this is working out.
Yeah.
I guess my one question is, why didn't you move earlier?
You know when you're in a bad relationship?
No.
You know when you're in a terrible relationship and you stay because you are still getting something out of the relationship? And because you've been in that bad relationship for so long, you just kind of assume all relationships are like that.
A comfy pair of jeans.
Right. So even if you get out of that relationship, you're just going to be back in a different relationship that's the same. So you might as well just stay where you are because you at least it's the devil, you know. You know that sort of feeling?
Not intimately.
That's kind of like what it is. And then you get somewhere where you get a window.
You got a window, for goodness sake.
And, you know.
And hipster barbers in the vicinity.
And hipster barbers and a login, clocking in and out again and not having to just wait until the end of the week and texting your boss's wife what your hours were, which I don't even know if that's technically legal, but it's what I used to have to do.
Oh, well.
So, yes.
It's all worked out for the best.
And it's actually a better relationship.
And you're saving on gas, so it's...
Yes, because we get to commute. How fun is that?
Yeah. Not an awful lot of conversation at 7:30 in the morning, but...
No. Wait. We're driving through the wilds of Michigan.
Avoiding construction.
Yes.
Anyway. That's great. I'm very pleased for you.
Yes.
Congratulations once more.
Thank you very much.
Shall we preamble, my dear?
Yes, please.
Give us some of that hipster barber. Corey News.
We've been enjoying Coulson in the Big Brother house.
We have.
He's been delightful.
He is delightful.
He's going to win.
I think he's favourite to win.
Yeah.
And I called it.
You called it before it started.
Before it
you
started.
Were like, and he's going to win.
I got quite a few agreements saying, you know, apart from anything else, he's a nice guy.
Right.
But also,
he's not objectionable.
Corey fans are going to vote for Corey. And
that's
a big block of votes right
there. That is true.
So, yeah, he's doing well.
Yes. But enjoyed even more when Jack P. Shepherd forgot to turn off his phone alarm during his interview on Good Morning Britain. When he was being interviewed on Good Morning Britain, him and Ben Price, about who's in his 50s.
Yeah, he's about the same age as me. I think he's maybe a little older than
me. He's 51. He's older than you.
Yeah.
He doesn't look it.
Thanks.
He doesn't. I'm not saying he doesn't look older than you.
I think in a way you were saying that.
He doesn't look it like he's in his 50s. Then again, we're all getting closer.
To death?
Yeah.
That's true.
And like they're in this interview and they're talking about Coulson and how supportive they are of him.
Yeah.
You know, because everybody seems to think they're his best friends because of the podcast that I no longer listen to. Because it's not about movies anymore.
Yeah, I kind of lost interest a little bit when it started to be less about movies.
Right. Yeah. When it officially became not a movie podcast anymore, it's like, yep, out. Sorry, guys. Right. Will Roach has had some tax issues lately, but at a hearing at the High Court in London this week, was given a 12-week adjournment to allow time to sell a property, which hopefully will help him out in paying those. He wasn't there. It didn't last very long. But it seems like the High Court is really trying to help out this lovely 90-year-old famous white man in Great Britain.
Sure.
Yeah.
I thought that was all sorted.
No.
But it seems to be in the process of getting
right.
Sorted.
It's so getting sorted. It's been reduced.
You don't want this sort of thing hanging over you at that age.
No.
Bloody hell.
No.
Better things to worry about.
Like maybe retiring someday. And finally, racist Kelly may be missing, but actor Kate Fitton, who plays Lauren, turned 22 last week successfully, without being murdered by Roy or Daniel or anyone. So happy birthday to her.
Now, she has set the cat amongst the pigeons on her Instagram page, where she's listed in her bio as formerly Lauren / racist Kelly from Corrie.
Mm.
On her Twitter, she's still shown as currently playing.
Mm-hmm.
But
who's on Twitter?
Has she left a little clue here, or she just messed them with some of the viewers trying to make out that she really is out of the show?
I don't think
for a moment that she's out of the show.
Yeah. Apparently, Liam, who plays Dylan on the show, is like her bestie.
Oh, nice.
On the show and, you know, was sending her greetings on the Insta about her birthday.
Very good.
Yep. All those blondes, they stick together, don't they?
They sure do.
And that's Corrie News.
That's Corrie News. And that, with mention of Kate Fitton, leads us seamlessly into our feedback section that I like to call Everyone's a Critic.
Yeah. Christmas of Mars.
Hanukkah and Uranus. The musical.
We should do a 45 pressing of Christmas of Mars. We'd make a killing.
Now, Wendy has a list.
Yes.
It's a list of things that the show has forgotten, and we're going to add to that list this week.
Or things the show hope the We've viewer forgotten. Has forgotten.
Yeah, and that is that Sharon Bentley left the show having taken on Harry's gang, remember?
Harvey's gang.
Taken over Harvey's gang.
Yeah.
I think the show has definitely forgotten that.
Yeah.
Because Harvey seems to be very much in charge of Harvey's gang.
Yeah.
Where he's bum
or maybe... phone. Maybe he has a new gang, a bum phone gang.
They all have bum phones?
Yeah. They all speak out of their asses.
They're all set to vibrate. And Daisy wrote in, I love Swain, her bacon butty chat, but I can't believe what she's doing to Roy. I'm actually distraught. Roy is forever and always will be my hero.
That's not the thing that I find the most objectionable about Swain this week, but we'll get to that later.
And Cheeky wrote, the only thing I can really say about this week in Coronation Street is that I'm glad that Dylan fully embraced his part in being a bully and also admitted to the audience that it was about being popular more than anything else. The only problem with that statement is we never saw him get popular with girls or any other guys around the school for that matter, so even admitting that to his family was a bit pointless. I will also say I loved Ea Swain this week and I'm glad that she's making Craig a smarter cop, or at least someone worth watching briefly a moment at a time. And also, congratulations to Helen on her new gig.
Aw, thank you, Cheeky. That's something else we need to add to Wendy's list.
Wendy's list of things the show's forgotten?
Right. The fact that girl and Dylan almost lost their virginity to one another, and then that girl disappeared. What happened to Dylan's little girlfriend?
I can't even remember that. That was a thing?
Yeah, it was a thing in the Rovers, when the Rovers were shut down and they broke in.
Yes, what did happen to
and
her?
And he took her upstairs, and then Mason and that kid with the terrible name, whose name I can't remember.
What did happen to antisocial Lauren?
I forgot we were calling her that.
I don't think we were. I think I just made that up.
That's even better. Antisocial.
What has happened to antisocial Lauren?
Seriously. Because initially it seemed like it was working because these girls were hanging out with Mason and now they're not hanging out with Mason.
Yeah, because he keeps on stealing their mascara.
That's right.
Feedback is always welcome. Send us your thoughts. I will probably read them out. Get us at thetalkofthestreet@gmail.com or our DMs are open at Corey Podcast, and we reserve the right to edit comments for brevity. We've got homes to go to, people. But thank you for Cheeky and Daisy for their thoughts this week. It's much appreciated. And now we'll podcast for coffee. We're buying our own coffees this week.
No congratulatory coffees for my first week of work? Well, I thought you guys loved me.
Nope, they don't give a shit.
Aw.
But, hey, I bought you some cranberry juice earlier on, so enjoy. I'm on the Canada Dry, zero sugar. It is what it is. The Talk of the Street is and will always be free on your podcast provider and on the YouTubes, but if you think our show is worth anything more than the time it takes to listen to it, if you want to show your appreciation, you can buy us next week's coffee by going to ko-fi.com, that's ko-fi.com/thetalkofthestreet. And you can also sign up to be a friend of the podcast through the same link, where for as little as $2 a month, you can get a mention in the closing credits of each and every episode. And remember, you can always support the podcast for free. Get us in front of new listeners by liking, subscribing, rating and reviewing wherever you get your podcasts. And now, this.
Welcome.
Well, welcome to Last Year Tonight with me, John Oliver. Just enough time to quickly talk about Chinny Recon.
I have no fucking idea what that means.
Chinny Reckon?
No.
Itchy Chin?
No.
That's right, this was Glenda not believing that Beth was off to have dinner with her sister. Rather, she was meeting up with her old flame. When you Chinny Recon something, you're scratching your chin in kind of disbelief. From the old English TV pundit, Jimmy Hill.
No idea.
I was Gavin and you got to hold a buffalo penis.
Oh, I thought you had a sound for that.
But let me check my soundboard for the buffalo penis sound. No, that's not it.
Can you make can you make the sound of a very startled buffalo?
I don't know what a buffalo sound. Do they sound like cows? I assume they sound like cows.
Kinda. They mostly just, you know, stand and look regal and stalwart.
And chew.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah, Not only did I do that, I cataloged it and I sold it and I bid on it because I really wanted to give it to you for your birthday.
I did not want it. I made it clear in that episode that I didn't want it.
I know. But I still wanted to get it for you for your birthday because that's just the kind of person I am.
Yeah.
I want to buy you a penis because I love you.
I've already got one.
But wouldn't it be fun to have more? If one is fun, just imagine if you had two.
I don't like the way this podcast's going. This was the results of your first picking trip. And this table was in for an awful lot of shuggling. It's been shuggling a wee bit tonight as well. It has. At my work, it took me 3 hours to find a greater than sign that had been in the wrong place. I've been having that kind of week again this week.
Ugh.
Not helped by being just with the clocks going forward.
Yeah, that's
just
always
so
rough.
Outrageously tired. Like, so I've got the Face ID on my phone.
Uh-huh.
I get up in the morning this week. The first thing I do, obviously, is go to the bathroom.
Phone.
And I look at my phone, and the phone says, I haven't a fucking clue who you are. And this is a phone that knows what I look like in the dark.
Yeah.
And it looks at me in the morning and goes, nah, I'm going to need more information.
Is this when you're drinking a Canada Dry as well?
No, I'm sitting in the toilet.
Right, but you also drink Canada Dry when you're on the toilet.
Just in the evenings. I'm not a monster. Got some perpetual motion thing going on with my Canada Dry when I'm in the bathroom. Doesn't everybody do that?
Anyway, no.
It's a little gross, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
It is. Not going to lie. Your wife. I don't lie to you.
Daisy turns the tables on Justin and concocts a plan to encourage PC Tinker to take decisive action. Tim's meeting with Miley is a success until Faye catches wind that her dad has been going behind her back. Hoping Sam are adorable and manage to scam some cash out of Tyrone for a date to the cinema, Beth meets up with her ex-boyfriend and has never looked so happy. Nick's attempts to get back home with Leanne and Sam fail, while Adam becomes worried about the financial security of the law office. Stephen works to gain control of the knicker factory, but Rufus becomes suspicious of his sudden interest in hallucinogenics. Sarah procures a toaster, Max is down a jumper, and Dev has a hat. Our moment of the week was Rufus confronting Stephen about drugging Carla. That was very good. And a boring moment of the week was, guess who?
Daniel.
Daniel harping on about Great Expectations. And that was Coronation Street and the Talk of the Street. This time for last
which,
year.
For which he was arrested this week.
Yes, he was. Oh, that's so good. I can't wait to talk about that. But unfortunately, we have lots of other shite to get through first.
Yes.
Shall we dive in, my dear?
Yes, please.
Our first storyline tonight is Bully for You. Just some stuff on Monday about this one. Sean is looking for a place to live, but everything is so fucking expensive these days.
It's like $1,000 or £1,000.
£1,000 a month for rent.
Uh-huh. That's typical.
That doesn't seem all that bad.
It really doesn't, does it?
Because that's your utilities paid for as well.
Yeah. It really does not seem that bad.
Hey, but it's only okay if you've got the money to pay for it.
Right.
If you don't have the money to pay for it, it might as well be
yeah.
$1 million a month.
Yeah, we don't know what Carla's paying.
Paying Sean? Yeah, I don't think he's the highest paid person in that factory.
Well, no, obviously.
Dylan seems keen to get moving to a new start and promises that he hasn't consorted with Mason anymore, despite what that Gary says. Meanwhile, Liam is getting ready to start being homeschooled by Maria when the police arrive to let everyone know that Mason's prints were found on the knife, and so he's been charged.
Huzzah!
I would have liked to have seen that.
Yeah, seriously.
See that little shit get his comeuppance?
Yeah, this happens quite a bit this week, where the police do something off screen and then come on screen to tell us about it. And that's really annoying.
This really feels like, unless, and God knows it probably isn't, the end of the whole Mason being a bully storyline. I can't imagine this is how it's going to end, but him getting lifted by the cops feels like a big pivotal moment in the storyline. And we just hear about it where,
right.
If you're not paying full attention, you could mistake them for having this conversation about Dylan.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dylan's been charged about the knife thing. Mm-hmm. And not realise that it's actually Mason they're talking about.
And they do.
A strange, strange choice.
And they do mention the whole Eliza thing, but they're like, or they mention Tyrone's car, and they're like, well, we don't have conclusive evidence for that yet. And it's like very obvious from the Eliza storyline this week that nobody seems to have told Stu or Tyrone, for that matter, that they possibly know who stole the car and who hit Eliza.
Yeah, and this already is a thing that's on Wendy's list of the things that the show's forgotten about.
Right.
Yeah, a very strange choice, very strange decisions there.
Do they just know that we're all fed up with it and just want to wrap it up very quickly?
About the bullying stuff?
Yeah.
I think we're all more bored with Eliza stuff. But no, I think the way this has gone over the last couple of weeks, where I agree it's been dragged out, it maybe needed to be dragged out because these things aren't resolved overnight, but the last couple of weeks I thought has been like amongst the best that the storyline's been and quite compelling.
It's true.
So I think I've been would be more forgiving of just all we want is a scene.
Right.
Just a minute and a half and yeah. We're done and that's it.
We just want to see the little shit arrested.
Yeah, pretty much.
Please. Give us that.
Yeah, but no prints were found in Tyrone's car. And of course they're not, because this was months ago. Maria and Liam are relieved and Gary does his bit by bringing a stinking big bell home that he rings quite loudly. This is to announce that it's home time from yes. The homeschooling.
Right.
They're not the only ones to be happy about this. Dee Dee and Sean are also happy that Mason has been charged, as this means Dylan might get away with it. Sean can't wait to hurry home to tell Eileen and Dylan about this, but to Dylan, this doesn't change anything.
That's
and he
right.
will still take responsibility for his actions by pleading guilty.
Yeah.
He knew what he was doing, Liam could have died, and the only reason he was doing all of this was to be popular.
And to get the girls.
Eileen looks like she's a bit impressed by this, and you know what? So am I.
Yeah.
Dylan is redeemable.
He is.
He was a cowardly bully.
Yes, he was.
And he's going to have to live with that.
Yeah.
But he can turn the corner here, and now it looks like that's what he's trying to do. Meanwhile, in Speedal, Gary's sure that this whole sorry mess is now over. Oh, so close.
I wish he hadn't said that, because then maybe it would have been over. Right. But obviously it's not over.
Right. And that's as far as we get for that storyline this week.
Yes. That was it. Huzzah. Or not. I don't know. It does feel like after dragging it out forever, we are kind of rushing towards the finish line.
Yeah, when did this start? Probably towards the end of last year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's been a long time getting to this point.
Yeah.
It does leave some plates a-spinning, though, appendices to this storyline, such as, does this mean that Sean and Dylan still have to move out of Eileen's? Does it mean that Liam's still going to be homeschooled?
Does it kind of feel like, to you, that the whole Eileen threatening to kick Sean out was just done so that Sean will go look at Lauren's flat and complain about the stains?
It may very well be.
Because it does seem like Eileen is softening.
She's softening by hearing that Dylan's taking responsibility for his actions. And the thing that makes me think that you're right is because we've watched the show before.
Yeah.
But also, running alongside this concurrently, we have Simon doing the right thing.
That's
and taking
right.
responsibility for his actions.
Yes.
So we've got two of the younger members of the cast kind of doing the same thing in different storylines, and
right.
that feels kind of weird. Maybe less so if one of them's only doing it as a plot point or as the genesis of a plot point.
Right.
Which I think you're right. It's just to get Sean looking at that flat.
Which is ridiculous, because you'd think that those particular stains in particular would have given Roy, an intelligent man, pause when he was cleaning up.
And we'll get to all that, I guess.
We will.
Maria, as the teacher, was quite funny, didn't you think?
I don't know. I mean, what's funny about it?
Well, her method of teaching is to ask Liam what a fossil is, and then she's reading a book. And so until Liam says exactly what's written in the book, she just keeps on saying, And so he finally gives her the full answer.
Right.
And she's thrilled, and she goes for a high five, and he just...
How many high fives do you think she's asked for during the day?
Yeah.
And I mean, we haven't seen everything. I mean, we haven't seen her do maths yet.
No. So Maria's skill set has been working on a dog kennel.
Cutting hair.
Lots of cutting hair.
Council.
Barmaid stuff. Council stuff. I don't know. It kind of gives the impression that anybody can homeschool. I think there's more to it than that, don't you?
I don't know. We kind of did it during the during lockdown, and it was hell.
Yes.
It was hell. Nobody should be teaching... Well, nobody should be teaching curriculum sex education to their 16-year-old son. Regular sex education, it's fine, but like the curriculum stuff can be like awkward.
Especially when you don't have a buffalo penis to use as a prop.
Right, yeah. So instead you just take the kid to Oppenheimer.
Yes. All right, let's move on to our next storyline, which is the Simon doesn't fall far from the Peter. I still haven't thought of another title for this.
It's fine. It's a good title.
On Monday, Simon is doing his best to make amends for the crash, much like Dylan is in the previous storyline, and has made Leanne and Nick a lovely breakfast. What's he made them?
Like eggs?
Smoked salmon, wasn't it? Smoked salmon and scrambled eggs.
Yeah, with chives.
And Nick isn't impressed. He still can't fucking stand the sight of Simon, so he kind of turns his nose up to this. And Leanne turns her nose up at Nick turning his nose up. At work, Leanne is looking for people to write character references for Simon, whose case is tomorrow. Indeed, he suggests Sam, but when Leanne approaches Sam, Nick is fucking furious about this. Sam, though, is happy to help so long as he can write whatever he wants without anyone telling him.
Right.
Leanne. He wants to explain how terrified that accident made him, which Leanne kind of gets a little bit anxious about. And then Nick is happy to let Sam write the letter after all. At home, Simon continues to make an effort to impress Nick, and Sam's letter is a glowing endorsement. Nick still isn't buying it, hasn't forgiven Simon for the accident, and hasn't really forgiven Leanne for lying about it. Leanne tells him that if you can't support Simon, keep your arse away from the court then.
Seriously.
On Wednesday, it's Simon's day in court, and he's in good spirits, or drunk, it's hard to tell. When they head off, Toya is surprised and disappointed that Nick isn't going too. At work, she asks him about it, recognises that he's still angry at Simon, but reckons Leanne and Simon would appreciate his support, especially with Peter gone. Nick makes it just in time to hear Simon get community service and a 6-month driving ban. Nick looks like he wishes Simon had got the death penalty. Back Fuck in the him. Pub, Simon is celebrating getting off for drink driving by having a lovely pint of beer. I thought that was a little inappropriate, don't you think?
No, yeah. I thought he was giving up the beer.
Apparently not. Nick pretends he's proud of Simon standing up for himself and taking responsibility for the accident. Back at the flat, Simon mentions a self-help group that he's been attending. They're having a seminar at the Rape Hotel tomorrow. What a weird thing to say, says Leanne. Privately, she tells Nick how glad she is to put that behind them and how much she's looking forward to planning their wedding. Yes, says Nick.
Yes.
On Friday, Simon is with Leanne ahead of the seminar at the Rape Hotel and has dragged Leanne along with him. And they bump into Debbie, who suggests that Nick and Leanne scope the hotel for a wedding fair that's happening today in a different room from the seminar. Meanwhile, David is in the bistro to book a table because people do that.
Yeah.
They go into restaurants in person to book a table.
I guess so.
They don't phone. There's no app for that.
Apparently there is an app for that because Daisy uses the app for that. But, you know, David maybe wants to see his brother and say, hey, how's it going, dude? Because that's how they talk.
Yeah. David comes in and says, hey, how's it going, dude? And Nick goes, yeah, brah. Oh! Nope, she's off.
I'm just imagining that price saying brah.
David lifts.
Oh.
Or has lifts. One of the two.
He's bussing.
He is bussing.
I don't even know what that means.
And he's always hustling.
Yeah. And he's got the razz.
He gets a cream from the doctor for that. So, David turns up to book a table because that's normal behaviour. And they talk about Simon's reprieve and Nick's feelings about Leanne. Despite agreeing to put all this behind them, Nick clearly hasn't. And he cannot be fucked to think about the wedding fair when Leanne brings it up. She's not amused by this, so Nick goes along anyway, but is dreadfully non-committal and dismissive when Debbie tries to pin them down for a date in August. Leanne is not amused by this either, so Nick has to come clean. He doesn't want to marry her. Yet.
Yes. And he still pauses a lot before that yet as does. Well.
And if pushed, he's still pissed off about her lying. They're interrupted when Simon comes out from the seminar thing. He and Nick leave, which leaves Leanne to be introduced to the guy who ran the seminar, a man named Rowan, who gives her some new world advice that lands about as welcome as you would imagine. But they get talking and Debbie joins in as Rowan talks about his methods of dealing with disappointment. He asks what happens when Leanne feels she can't touch the world and is buffering. Nick's buffering, isn't he?
Pretty much.
Always buffering.
Every day he's buffering.
How does she live authentically? No one has a fucking clue what he's talking about. Back home, Leanne apologises to Nick for pushing him into the wedding. Nick is sorry too, says that he's always loved her. It's always been her. They agree to put the wedding on the back burner for the time being.
They don't need no piece of paper.
No. And that's as far as we get with that this week.
So a cult storyline then.
So I'm led to believe.
And it's more like the Nexium kind of cult and not like drinking Kool-Aid in South Africa cult.
Is there a difference?
Well, yes, a little.
One has refreshments by the sounds of things.
One leads to mass suicide and one leads to the cult leader's name getting tattooed on your vagina.
On your vagina?
Yeah, I think so. Or like the labia part, not like inside your
Can
vagina.
Can you tattoo that?
Apparently.
Ugh. The worst tattoo I think I'd heard of before hearing about this was a guy who played guitar for the industrial metal band Biohazard, who got the Biohazard symbol tattooed inside his lip.
Yeah.
Like, that's not
I
nice.
I don't understand why people get the inside of their lip tattooed. It's just so they could go like, you want to see something cool?
Bruh.
Look at my inside of my lip.
No, no, that's not nice.
Then again, there's that guy that adopted a dog that had a tattoo on it. And so he decided to get the symbol that was on his dog tattooed on himself.
Oh, that's nice.
And the tattoo that was on his dog was tattooed there to let people know that the dog was fixed. So now the man has a tattoo that says he's fixed, that somebody has cut off his balls.
And is he fixed?
I would assume not. Well, I would assume he still has his balls.
The story kind of falls apart at that point, doesn't it?
That's true.
If you can dislike someone right off the bat, and I've met people at work like this. I've sat in meetings with people who talk like this Rowan guy.
Yeah.
And I've walked out and I said, I can't be the only one who has no fucking clue what that person was talking about.
Yeah.
And I'll write down little quotes and say them back to people and say, what do you think this meant? when he was talking about Leanne not being able to touch the world and his buffering, what does that mean? What does it mean when you can't touch the world? What does it mean when you're buffering?
It means you're frozen in time and you can't make a decision.
Well, say that then, because that makes sense.
But he's got to say in a cool hipster way. And not like a hipster barber. Because hipster barbers really are cool.
Now, this was Nick's idea in the first place to get married, wasn't it?
Seriously, he's the one who bought a ring. And then Toya told Leanne about the ring. And that's when she proposed to him. But remember, he got the ring. He was going to propose. And then the whole thing with Simon happened and he decided not to propose. But he didn't tell anybody that he's decided not to propose. And that's why Toya told Leanne.
Right.
So, I don't know.
His problem with Leanne is not so much the Simon thing, but the lying about the Simon thing.
Yeah.
And that feels a little hypocritical of what with Nick's lying about the Harvey thing.
Right. Yeah, which was a bigger lie. Let's not kid ourselves. That was a much bigger lie because it led to Natasha dying.
And it was somebody who was trying to kill Leanne. Let's not forget that. Nobody was trying to kill Natasha.
Right. And also,
I'm still angry about that.
Let's remember the millions of times both of those characters have lied to other people. Let's not forget Nick stealing from his grandmother, yeah, shall Nick. We?
Yeah, Nick.
You know? And it's frustrating because he seems to be okay with Simon now. He seems to be softening in one scene. And then immediately afterwards he's slagging the kid off again. It's like what he's playing chess with Sam right now.
Mm-hmm.
What is your problem?
That's
a good big brother.
Nick has been this grumpy shit for the longest time, though.
Him and Stu must have drunk the same Kool-Aid.
Yes.
And not the suicidal kind.
Now, we have had a cult storyline before.
It's been a while.
Famously, the cult of Nirab, which was Nirab being an anagram of Brian. Brian Park, who was the Ian McLeod of his day. And they had a portrait of Nirab in the house, and it was a portrait of Brian Park, hilariously enough. And the girl who was kind of involved in that, Joanne Froggatt, has gone on to do amazing things in showbiz since leaving Coronation Street.
And, of course, the racist group was kind of a cult because they had their leader and they had their beliefs that nobody could talk them out of.
That's true.
And they did things towards their beliefs that if they were sensible people, they'd never do.
I'm interested to see where they go on this with presumably Leanne.
Right. and Simon.
Because I think Leanne, out of all of them, is probably still quite vulnerable after Oliver.
Yeah, and she mentions Oliver to the guy.
Mm-hmm. So, while Leanne is kind of the bolshy, strong, determined character.
Yes.
If you look for that kind of soft underbelly Achilles heel.
If you look for the cracks, thing, they're there.
Yeah. And she's already kind of admitted what that is. It'll be interesting to see what this cult is. Is it just a cult of using horribly vague language to describe really simple concepts?
Who knows?
Simon was wearing a leather jacket and a shirt and tie this week.
He was.
That's kind of unforgivable, isn't it?
It's fine. Stelly does that all the time.
Yeah.
Going to school.
Well, I wouldn't.
Of course, she also wears a fedora.
See, that's what Simon's missing.
Simon is missing the fedora.
And how do you feel about them putting the marriage on the back burner or the wedding on the back burner? I was kind of looking forward to the two of them getting married again.
I don't care.
You don't care?
No.
Speak to the wrong person.
As long as they're still together, that's fine by me. You know?
They're like an old married couple
they
anyway.
They are. Yeah.
So.
They kind of really don't really necessarily need a piece of paper. Besides, Corey weddings are always kind of anticlimactic, aren't they?
The ones that do well, they do really well.
Right. Yeah. But then the next week, they're like knee deep in diapers and throwing Granny Linda under the bus. So.
Sure.
I'm just thinking about the most recent wedding. At least they're able to do weddings again, and it's not like Gary and Maria with like four people.
Gary Maria's was so disappointing, and then just a few months later, you've got Adam and Sarah's that was wonderful.
It was gorgeous, and now they're getting divorced.
That, remember that Charles Rennie Macintosh yes. kind of theme about it that. And yeah, got me a little homesick that bit. Yeah. I'm not going to lie about that.
That's why I bought you those glasses.
These glasses?
No, the Rennie Macintosh glasses.
Oh, those glasses. Yeah. Very good.
Yes.
All right, let's move on. Our next storyline is Eliza moans a lot.
She really does.
That's like an Eliza Doolittle sort of thing. Mm. On Monday, inexplicably, Stu is wandering around with Dom's 10 grand in his pocket and he sits down in Nina's rolls to count it. Just out in the open. Counting 10 grand before putting it back in his pocket.
Why not?
It's like he's had this in his pocket for 2 days. Put it somewhere safe, you idiot. In the restaurant, Stu decides to put the money in a trust for Eliza, anything to get it out of his fucking pocket. And later, when Eliza comes in for lunch, she asks for money for the cinema. And rather than wait for Stu to give her the money, she goes rooting about in his pocket.
Yeah, who does that?
Finds the envelope, finds the money, and there's a note there, of course, from Dom, apologising for letting Eliza down. What the fuck is this? Eliza demands. And exactly, who does this?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, this week has been mostly taken up by what is going to be our final story of the week, the racist Kelly stuff. But the corners that have been cut here to make this work are ridiculous.
Yeah.
You need to have Stu walking about with 10 grand in his pocket like nobody does.
Mm-hmm.
In a show where people leave things on tables when they go for a shite and all this other stuff, he's carrying about a large amount of money with him on his person. And then Eliza just takes it upon herself to go into his pocket.
Right.
Rip it out. And of course there has to be a note there to explain what the money is. And of course she has to read that as well.
Now, I think this is where it's important to remember that Stu at one point was homeless. And I would absolutely believe that someone who has spent time as a homeless person would not trust to leave money where he couldn't see it and where he couldn't touch it. I believe.
Now, I have thought that as well, and I would have believed that had it not been for the fact that Stu has been in receipt of a large amount of compensation money for his false imprisonment, which is tucked away neatly in his bank account.
Right. But
And remember, this is his money.
Yeah, this is some of that. So, and he hasn't had a chance to put it back in the bank yet. So I would.
3 days.
Yeah, I absolutely believe that he would carry it around.
I don't believe he would carry it around. I don't believe that he would count it in Nina's roles, which I can concede that he just does so we can see it.
Right.
And I don't believe that Eliza would just go straight in his pocket, as much as she's a little brat.
Yeah, that was the part that really upset me, because she's like, oh, it's okay, I can get it. And Stu's like, no, I'm washing my hands so that I can get it for you. And she's like, la la, ripping things out. It's not even his wallet. She went in for his wallet and like, oh, what's in this bag? None of your fucking business.
Right.
You were going in for a wallet so you could go to the cinema with your friends. Like, you know, like the cultured person you are in your purple coat.
Yeah, Mrs. Purple Coat.
Purple Coat.
Stu admits to attempting to pay off Dom to fuck off out of their lives, and he made a mistake. Oh, and by the way, your dad still doesn't want to see you, and I'm sure there's another thing. Oh yeah, you've got a half-brother in Germany. Eliza can't believe anyone would choose another kid over her, and storms off. This is a lot of information to take on for the little girl.
It is.
Credit.
For her age, yeah.
Let's absolutely. Give her some credit.
Absolutely.
Eliza's furious at this as well, because she's been kept in the dark about all of it. Yasmin thinks it's better to give Eliza some space to process all this, and Stu mocks her for sounding like Oprah. Instead, he wants to talk to Eliza. Give her a fucking break, says Yasmin.
So seriously.
So he does. Now, Wednesday, grumpy Eliza and Stu are in Nina's roles. She's down in the dumps because her dad doesn't want her. At school, she tells Sam and Hope about wanting to track down Dom. Hope has some ideas to call around hotels using their child skills to extract information from the desk staff. So the three of them bunk off school and track Dom down to the rape hotel, would you believe? And Dom shits himself when he sees Eliza. She explains that Stu has confessed, but Dom admits to messing up too. Insists that he didn't choose his German family over her. Later, Stu's just got a call from the school about Eliza dogging it when she walks in to speed dial with Dom. Eliza says that she wants Dom in her life, and if he's going to Germany, she wants to go too. But Dom and Stu agree that it's not practical. So later, on Friday.
It's so nice that everybody agrees now. It's almost like this was never a problem to begin with.
On Friday, in speed dial, Eliza is learning German. She wants to hit the ground running when she moves over there. And this gives Stu some cause for concern. But later, Stu meets Dom, tells him that he's given the flit to Germany the green light after all. Dom needs to come clean with his family over there first. And
right, yeah. Can you imagine if he just flew back, knocked and, you know, walked in the house? Hi, honey, I'm home.
This wee grumpy shit that I brought with me? Yeah, that's my daughter.
That's my daughter that you've never heard of and that I never told you about. Surprise! Well, what extra kid for you to take care of.
What he eventually does isn't much better. But anyway, he needs to tell his family first, and they agree on a trial run over Easter. They run this by Eliza after Dom has told his family over FaceTime.
Yeah. He zoomed them.
Yep.
Hiya!
Oh, by the way, that's not a FaceTime conversation.
No.
That's not a, this meeting could be an email either.
No.
That's a face-to-face thing, isn't it?
Yes.
Anyway, if she likes it, she can move there permanently. Stu will even pay for the international school.
So she doesn't have to learn German after all.
Bis dann schlampen, says Eliza, which means so long, bitches.
Yes.
And that's as far as we get with that storyline.
Bitter.
Oh, how quickly we're trying to bring this to a close, don't you think? I mean, while I agree that, wait a minute, a lot of this wasn't a problem in the first place if just people could sit down and talk to each other.
Right.
Which, let's and face it.
And not get overly mad at one another and not be emotional.
This is half the problem with half the storylines. But yes, right. Certainly if people were just to sit down and talk to each other rationally, this could have been resolved months ago. But now that this is on the table, oh my God, we're moving quickly to make this happen.
Right.
Because at the start of the week, he's just come back.
Right.
Eliza doesn't even know.
Right.
By the end of the week, she's going to Germany at Easter with a chance that she's going to be staying there permanently. And she is going to stay there permanently.
Yeah, she is.
This hasn't been brought up so she can go over there and say nah or nine and come back again. This is a show saying this storyline was a stupid idea. We shouldn't have done it. Let's forget it ever happened.
Yeah.
Because while we're forgetting about things that the show's forgotten about, what about Dom? Aren't we forgetting things about Dom's character?
How right.
he was very happy just to be the worst dad in the world for a while.
Right. Letting her stay up late, not caring what she watches. You know, buying her lots of poor food choices, neglecting her.
Yeah, there was a very much a play to make Dom look like the bad guy.
Yeah, and now all of a sudden he's not.
And he's reasonable.
Yeah.
And there's no issues at all.
Yeah.
And him and Stu are getting on now.
Yeah.
Because it was Stu that was looking like the asshole for the longest time.
Right.
He still is a little bit, but he was the baddie in the situation.
But now everybody is okay with one. What is this gonna do to the Gen Alpha gang though? It'll just be Sam and Hope again. And then occasionally Joseph, who's also kind of in the storyline, only you'll talk about it in the other storyline that he's really in.
Yeah.
And
with Charlie Brown.
And what's her name?
Ruby.
Lily.
Lily. Lily?
Lily's Gen Alpha.
Oh, Lily, yeah.
Lily and Ruby.
Lily doesn't really hang out with them, though.
Which is weird,
is
right?
Is she older than them? I think she must be older than them.
I think she's slightly older than some of them, but I think she's like Sam's age, isn't she? Who knows? But it's like Max. Max doesn't hang out with the other Gen Z kids. He's made his own crew with Gavin and Sabrina and dead homeless Kelly. Dead racist Kelly, not homeless Kelly. I've still got Stu in my brain.
He was holding out, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Lily is or will be 11 this year. So she's 10 at the moment. So she is the right age.
Yeah. What's up with that? Because remember, there was a point where Lily and Eliza were watching a video together. It was the racist video that Max made. So when the plot demands it, Hope or Lily and Eliza could be friends. But then they completely forget about the fact that they're friends.
I think some of the kid actors are more, I don't know if they're more committed or they have more hours to give.
Right.
So some are in it more than others, obviously, and maybe Lily just...
She's not in it very often.
Very often.
As much as we see the plots, we don't see Lily very often at all, which is kind of weird.
That's kind of weird. I will not be sorry to see the back of this. This has been a very much a low point in the show recently, is this storyline. And the fact that it was on all week. You're not going to make me care about this by giving me more of it. I'm sorry. My mind's made up.
Yeah, and especially since it involves characters that initially we did care about. We did care about Stu when he was first on. And he was good. And the worst thing about him was his singing.
And that fucking guitar of his.
Right. Which we'll never see him play ever again.
Oh, let's be thankful for small mercies.
But still. You know, and then they created this whole weird convoluted story about his daughter murdering somebody with a school project.
With a diorama.
And then laying the blame on her dad. Because her mother, I guess, hated her dad.
And that's, I mean, if you're looking for examples of how little the show cares about this anymore, or the show cares about it as much as we do, think about Bridget's role in this. Bridget, who's now in jail, she hated Dom. She hated the idea that Dom was going to be back in Eliza's life. And she has greenlit, apparently, according to Stu, the move to Germany. She gets to see her daughter, precious little as it is, she's going to get to see her daughter not at all now, but apparently is fine with it.
Eliza says that she wants to move to Germany because Dom is the only parent she has left. Bridget's not dead. They just went to see her. She's just in prison. You have a mother.
Prison mother.
A mother who murdered someone and then laid the blame on her dad. True enough. But she's still your mother. She still exists.
I don't believe that the Bridget that we met would allow this to happen.
No.
Or certainly would allow this to happen in the space of one episode. She's right. told about it on Friday and she agrees to it on Friday. Okay, Cho, I appreciate that you're speeding us up for us, but it feels very uneven. I'm not going to complain about it. Am I complaining about it?
You've
I guess
already
I'm
complained
about
it far too much. Let's move on.
Okay. Moving on. Our next storyline tonight is Damon's dodgy deposit on Monday.
Doo-doo.
Triple D. On Monday, Sarah, Damon and Gail are looking at fixer-upper houses online in Nina's Rolls. Damon is sure that he can get bits and bobs on the cheap from his contacts and he can get Ed to help out. Gail doesn't know why they're in such a rush to move out of such a lovely place and Damon says it's because it's not their place. Privately, Damon calls Harvey on his arse phone to find out what his cut is going to be from this job. Harvey tells him that Sarah not being murdered is his payment. So it really was Sarah that they were trying to kill.
Which is like, no, Damon deserves some money out of this as well. What's wrong with you, Harvey? This is not how you run a British mafia.
Uh-oh. You got ideas about how to run a British mafia?
I do, actually.
Damon demands his fair share, or they go back and forth a lot on this, but eventually says he's just going to go to the cops. Later, Damon is in a good mood as he's presumably had good news from his financial advisor, Harvey, and he might be able to afford a proper, already fixed up house. Sarah wants to celebrate by getting her whole. And that's as far as we get with that this week.
I kind of love the relationship between Gail and Damon. She seems to have really kind of warmed to him. They're like conspiring behind Sarah's back and kind of bad-mouthing her between the two of them about, you know, how whiny she is. I love that. That's hilarious.
There was a lovely moment where Gail's buzzed the flat and Sarah's let her up and Sarah says, you know, she's just going to say that she swears that they've got more stairs there now. And when Gail comes in, she goes, oh, God, I could have sworn that there's more stairs there now. And Damon says, why don't you get the lift? And Sarah says she wants to get her steps in. And Gail says, I want to get my steps in.
Right.
I absolutely adored that.
I love that.
Because
that and the two of them complaining about how whiny Sarah is. Love it.
What a wonderful representation of this mother-daughter relationship.
Right.
I'm still not entirely convinced about Damon's urgency here or why is he even entertaining this idea for this stupid heist thing that Harvey's organising from the inside. He's already threatened to go at the cops. Why not just go at the cops?
Right, yeah.
You know, the relationship there seems a little bit fucked up. And I'm still confused about which one of these is supposed to be the hard man. Because wasn't Damon Harvey times two?
Supposedly.
That's not true.
That's not true anymore.
Damon's scared of Harvey.
Damon,
100%.
When we first met Damon, he threatened to kill his own son. That's not the Damon we have here.
No.
And it doesn't make sense that it was true love that changed him. This is not a Disney princess movie. Damon is not a Disney princess.
No, nor is Sarah, really.
No.
Disney princesses don't tend to wear leather as much.
Well, some of them do.
Which ones?
Mulan and
leather
and Merida.
So yes, as you were saying though,
it just doesn't make sense to me how they've completely 180'd this character And it still doesn't quite feel real to me. And yet, this is another thing for Wendy's list. Damon threatened to murder his...
That's already on the list. That was, I think, the first thing that was on it.
That Damon threatened to murder his son?
Mm-hmm.
I want him to come back.
I'd love Jacob to come back.
I'd love for Jacob to come back and sweep Amy off her feet and get her away from her terrible parents.
I'd love Jacob to come back. And the longer that we get this version of Damon, I become more and more confused about why we don't get Jacob back.
Right.
Because his dad's nothing to worry about.
Right. You'd think that Damon would call... If Damon has truly changed, why hasn't he called Jacob and apologized? Maybe he's protecting him? Maybe he doesn't want him to be back because then Harvey can threaten to kill him too?
Did Jacob go out of it because Damon threatened to kill him? But did Damon threaten to kill him because... Harvey would have killed him? Whose drugs was it? Was it Damon's drugs? It was Damon's drugs.
Yeah.
It had nothing to do with Harvey.
No.
Yeah, he just was just an absolute shit.
He was a terrible father.
And now it's like it never happened. That was very rushed at the time as
and,
well.
And now he's a balloon man. Well, remember, it's because the actor who played Jacob had another gig. But, you know, at this point, who knows if that gig still exists.
He was good, him and Amy.
Yeah, they were so cute together. I love them so much. And Amy really hasn't found that with anyone else.
She hasn't really been happy since...
Since Jacob left.
Since Jacob went out.
Yeah.
God bless her.
Yeah.
All right, our next storyline is Private Joseph. On Wednesday, at the Quad House, Granny Linda's back.
Yay.
I used to be pleased to see Granny Linda.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, what is she going to complain about next?
Now she's just this terrible, snooty woman who's only trying to help.
And for the longest time, I'm sitting looking at the living room thinking, is there supposed to be a big, massive fridge in there, or did Kirk take it away? They brought Kirk over to take it away, but I can't remember if he ever did or not.
No, he wasn't going to take it away. He was going to put it against the wall and plug it in.
So the fridge is still in that living room?
It's in the dining room part of the living room now.
It ain't
I
in
think.
The kitchen because it wouldn't fit
no,
in the kitchen.
No, it wouldn't fit in the kitchen. So it's against the wall, like over by the tables or something. It's against the wall where we can't see it.
Right, but it's not a big room.
It's really not.
And we've got some angles looking towards the kitchen right. This week, I thought. Should we be able to see the fridge in there?
Yeah, maybe this is something that needs to go on Wendy's list.
Well, I need to go back and check, and I honestly can't be bothered. If anyone can remember what happened to that fridge, did Kirk just move it, or did they get rid of it? I would be very grateful. Anyway, Granny Linda's back. Chesney's still sleeping on the couch, but no one's really talking about that. Granny Linda's been sat down for 5 seconds before she's poking her nose into why Joseph's doing his homework at the kitchen table before school. Joseph complains that his physics teacher is kind of rubbish at explaining things. Plus, he's missed so much because of his lupus.
No, Lyme disease.
Lyme disease. What's lupus? Is that something?
Lupus is an autoimmune disease. It's what my grandmother died from.
Yeah, Joseph hasn't got that.
No. He has Lyme disease, which makes you very sleepy and can give you seizures and can kill you. And the antibodies never leave your body.
I don't think it's really doing
that. I don't think anybody has mentioned the fact that he had Lyme disease. Nobody said the words Lyme disease since that one episode where they diagnosed him with Lyme disease.
Yeah, but that's why he's been missing school.
Though. Right, yeah. Because he was genuinely sick and nobody believed him.
Yeah, it sounded like you had something to say with the physics teacher.
Oh, yeah, apparently he's a dick and won't give him an extension, even though he was out with Lyme disease.
Which?
Because the physics teacher doesn't know what Lyme disease is.
Keeps on confusing it with lupus.
Right.
Hope sorts all that out for him later.
Again, you're welcome, United Kingdom. Enjoy our ticks.
So later, it seems that Granny Linda has found this cause to think that Joseph would be much better off in a private school, and she offers to pay for it. She tells Chesney to talk it over with Gemma and Joseph because Chesney is, initially anyway, very much against it. And when Ches runs it by Gemma, she's dead against the idea and doesn't want to treat the kids differently. Chez, because he's currently sleeping on the couch, agrees until Gemma suggests that she tutors Joseph. Now, while I have doubts about Maria being able to homeschool Liam, there's no way in the world that Gemma's homeschooling anybody.
Well, she's just tutoring him. She's not homeschooling, which is better. But
that should put the fear of death into Chesney.
And how do you say that to Gemma?
Gemma should hear herself say that and think, do you know what? Maybe I wouldn't be the best placed person to do that.
Who knows? Maybe she's brilliant at physics.
Maybe she has a calling. Absolutely.
You know, you never know. Stranger things have happened.
Mass equals force times time.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's all you need to know. That's physics.
That's right physics there. 101.
That's it. That's it. That's all you need to know.
Times pi equals 7.
I would like to know why an 11-year-old is in a physics class.
Oh, we got physics at 11.
Did you?
Hmm.
It's like a high school senior.
We started class. Off, it was all called science, but we did get some chemistry, we got some biology, and we got some physics.
Yeah, you get some basic stuff, but you just call it science, don't you? It's not. Because you don't get like really specific classes until high school. You have science, social studies, math, English, gym, art.
And some quiet time.
Music.
I remember playing Heads Down, Thumbs Up at school.
Seven Up.
Did you play Heads Down, Thumbs Up?
We called it Seven Up.
For you sit.
And you have your thumbs. Yep.
And you got your eyes closed and your head down.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody would walk behind you.
And put your thumbs down.
And what was the point of it after that?
And then you had to figure out who it was who put your thumbs down.
I don't know if we ever got to that, but I think it was just an excuse for the teacher to go out for a cigarette. I think that's what it was. All right, class, we're playing Heads Down, Thumbs Up.
Seven Up.
Not again. Why Seven Up?
I don't know. Because your thumbs are up. Seven Up. Thumbs up, Seven Up.
See, Heads Down, Thumbs Up really describes what you do.
And then Seven Up.
Seven Up requires some explanation, I think.
Seven Up.
Anyway.
It's fun.
There's no Heads Down, Thumbs Up at Oak Hill, that's for sure.
But there is a swimming pool.
And a recording studio for Joseph to lay down his sick beats.
And an archery course, because that's what Joseph needs. A big, massive bow.
Yeah. Have you read We Need to Talk About Kevin?
Be nice.
I don't think Joseph would, but...
Anyway. You know where I read We Need to Talk About Kevin? It was in our creepy, shining New Hampshire hotel that we haven't been to in years.
Oh, that's when you read that?
Yeah, in the pool.
Nice.
That the first time we went was closed because of algae in the dead of winter in New Hampshire.
I picked the best places to
you
go.
Do. Hey, we learned to love it.
Hey, it was cheap.
We learned to love it.
You had me at algae. It's a good book. It's tough going, though.
It is, and I will never watch the movie.
It's a good movie.
Yeah, but I can't watch that.
Sure. Gemma's dead against the idea, but Linda has already shown the brochure for Oak Hill to Joseph, and he's mad keen to go because they have a pool and a recording studio. Chess puts a kibosh on the deal, and Linda is furious, unable to understand why they would refuse this opportunity for Joseph. And Joseph, he's also fucking furious.
Right, yeah. Swimming pool and archery.
On Wednesday.
Two things Joseph definitely has an interest in.
If there's two things that we Joseph loves.
It's archery and swimming.
And then to a tertiary level, sick beats.
On Friday, maybe he'll record a podcast.
Gemma's still
about living in a deaf family, and he can teach people over a podcast
how to say lupus with sign language. On Friday, Gemma's still furious about Joseph getting a decent education at Oak Hill. Chesney's starting to see the benefits, which makes Gemma angrier, and she demands that Linda back all the way off. In the Rovers, Izzy's having lunch with Linda. Linda explains about the Oak Hill plan, and Izzy is sympathetic to...
No, she's not.
...to Gemma and Chesney.
Okay, yes.
Who wonders when Linda is going to show a fucking morsel of interest in Jake or the quads.
Have you ever heard of Jake? Have you ever heard of Jake? Izzy says to Jake's grandma, who has not given a fuck about her only living daughter's only child.
Furious, Izzy leaves her to it. Paul and Dee Dee, though, think they should bite Linda's hand off, and Joseph deserves this chance of a lifetime. Gemma is a bit of a working class snob here, and Paul points this out. Back home later, and Gemma has chilled a little on the matter, agreeing to scope out on an open day that's upcoming.
Right.
And that's as far as we get with that this week.
Gemma's right, though. A kid like Joseph is going to get bullied mercilessly at a school like that. Let's be honest.
Do you think?
He's never going to be able to bring his school friends home. He'd be too embarrassed. And they will laugh at him because he's poor.
Yeah, it's not that you've got the money to go to Oak Hill. It's what kind of money do you have?
Right.
Where did this money come from?
Right.
It's a wee shame because...
And he's such a sweet, kind of quiet kid.
He's those a lovely kid. He's a lovely, lovely
and
kid.
Those are the kind that get bullied. Look at Liam.
Washing behind his ears.
Right. He's like a little sad puppy of a child.
Yes.
Both of them.
Ah, Joseph is just so lovely. And he's just so downtrodden. He needs something good in his life.
Right, he's going to get there.
Remember
when
Chesney just shat all over him going to Portugal to live?
Right. He's going to get there. They're not going to be able to afford the fees for the archery. He's going to be wearing hand-me-down swim trunks in the pool. And he's going to get bullied mercilessly for both of those things.
And his sick beats are going to be derivative.
Correct. All about sure. Living poor on Coronation Street and having four siblings.
And witnessing Brian vomit over the school governor. And for, I think, is a very low point in the show's history.
Amongst many low points in the show's history.
I think he's going to go, though. I think Linda's going to wear them down.
I will only be happy if Jake also goes and the two of them can support one another. Of course, Jake hasn't been in the show. No, he has been in the show.
He has been
He's living with Gary.
Occasionally.
I've never seen him with Izzy. Of course, we rarely see Izzy.
Hmm.
Yeah.
He was the only sensible one in the whole
bullying storyline. So send both of those kids. Although I think Jake might object. I think Jake would much rather stay. I don't know, maybe not.
Gemma wants the quads paid for as well. And Granny Linda's like, I'm a fuck paying for them. They're no my blood.
Yeah, I thought that was a bridge too far. I mean, I kind of get her point about how if one of her kids is getting spoiled by a rich granny and the other kids don't have a rich granny, so they don't get spoiled, that makes things unfair, mm-hmm. and then there's terror in the house.
Yep.
I get it, but Granny Linda is under no obligation to the quads.
No, and the quads are so young that you can kind of postpone this problem a couple of years down the line.
Right, and one of them's deaf.
Right. All right, our penultimate storyline tonight is Tommy OMFG. On Wednesday, Steve is with Amy when they bump into Tracy. Tracy ignores Steve and is sad that Amy didn't even get her a Mother's Day card. She has to spend some time with her. And because Steve makes encouraging faces to her, Amy agrees to have lunch with her mum, which Tracy pitches as girly time. But when Amy turns up at the bistro later with a card and a gift, Tommy O is fucking there.
Fuck you, Tommy O.
And they're still an item. Amy is fucking furious about this.
Rightly so.
And orders the most expensive champagne to get it right up them. Later, Tommy O is pretty gassed in the champagne, but getting on fairly well with Amy as they chat about her uni work, and Tommy talks about his one Tommy O level. Back home, Amy tells Steve about her lunch with Tracy, but doesn't mention Tommy O, even when Steve asks if Tracy mentioned him. On Friday, Amy has been particularly nice to Steve and suggests that they spend some time watching a movie this evening. She even lets him pick. He picks Point Break.
Yeah.
She regrets it.
I just rewatched Point Break like last week.
In the pub
later. Kind of creepy.
In the pub later, though, which one? The Keanu one or the new one that was just dreadful?
The Keanu one. I saw the new one in theaters.
Yeah.
And it was dreadful. I love the Keanu one because Patrick Swayze's in it. I refuse to watch the new Roadhouse.
In the pub later, though, Steve is chatting with Toya and learns that Tommy was there with Tracy and Amy yesterday. After all, he tries to hide his hurt. He's calmed a bit when he goes to dinner with Amy and Speedal, and then tells her about Tommy O's plans for Spain. No one's meant to know, though, he says. He taps his nose, and Tracy's definitely in the dark for now.
And do you think she is?
That's as far as we get with that this week.
It's
yeah.
It's kind of weird that they're... Because Tommy O is dead set against having a relationship with Tracy.
That's what surprised me, was the
so
fact
why
that
are they still hanging out?
Why is he turning up to
And why is he schmoozing Amy? To try to get Amy on his good side so that he can keep boinking her mother.
Yeah, they were very, very couple-y together. This wasn't a casual fling relationship thing. This seemed to be that they're calling each other boyfriend and girlfriend and
sweetie
and babe and stuff like that. And it's like, oh, really?
No. This is not what we signed up for.
Tracy is going to go ballistic, that's for sure, when Tommy announces that he's on his way out. But then, is she though? Because I don't think that it was important that it was Tommy O. It's just that it wasn't Steve.
Right, which again makes me confused as to why they're still together.
Everyone was in agreement with us before it started. It was going to be a one-time, two-time thing. And then Tommy O was going to shag Sally.
And we only got sort of a promise of that. We never got to see him shag Sally, and we're all very sad about that.
And then who was it that was going to get Tommy O this week? Oh, it was Gail that mentioned Tommy O to
right.
Sarah. He could have shagged Sarah as well.
That would have at least been believable.
That would have worked. Tommy O with Sarah?
Yeah, that would have worked. Although, again, very tall man, very short woman. At least with Damon, she matches.
Yeah, because Damon's a wee short arse.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He's the MCU's next Wolverine. Expect to see him in Deadpool and Wolverine as one of the Wolverines.
Oh, dear.
Terrible
trailer.
It was a great trailer.
Ugh, awful.
Daniel Radcliffe's going to be a Wolverine. Isn't that exciting?
No. All right. We've delayed it for long enough. Let's move on to our final storyline tonight. Where on earth is racist Kelly? On Monday, Carla's having coffee with Bobby. Bobby!
Bobby!
Bobby, phone!
Bobby!
That kid ain't right. That boy ain't right. Yes, that's it. That's my Hank
that's
Hill.
That's your Homer Simpson impression?
No, it's Hank Hill.
Seems Roy has had
Homer
a bad...
Homer doesn't have a child named Bobby.
Oh, is that what you were saying?
Yes.
Seems Roy has a bad back after his efforts at Lauren's. Bobby, referring to himself in the third person, promises Carla that his mind is now fully on his job at the factory. Once there, though, Bobby mentions to Sean, who is looking for a new place to live in another storyline, that racist Kelly's flat has suddenly become available. So Sean goes off to view it, but is unimpressed by the decor, the location, the view, or the blood splatter on the curtains. What did you think of the blood splatter on the curtains? I thought it was chocolate sauce or part of the pattern. It was really
yeah,
hard to tell.
That looked like part of the pattern. And it's weird because there's that big ass blood stain on the carpet that nobody seems to be talking about.
Not yet. Back at the factory, Sean complains about the mess and the smell of blood in the soft furnishings, which Carla hears about. And Carla suggests taking time to think sensibly about this, but after speaking with Sally and Beth, she goes off to tell Bobby.
Bobby!
So off they go to the cop shop where PC Tinker has been a bit of an insubordinate to our Swain.
Aren't you glad you made that now? Because now we're going to be using it so much and it won't go away like Ryan's house did.
Ryan's nest.
Yes.
Yeah. Bobby gives Tinker a hard time for sitting in his arse doing nothing while Carla tells them about the bloody curtains. Not the bloody curtains like the fucking curtains. The bloody curtains as in the curtains with blood on them. So Swain and Tinker go to look at the flat and chat about takeaways, which is Tinker's favourite conversation.
Now, are we okay with Swain being nice to Tinker?
I prefer it when she's not.
Yes. She's not supposed to be nice to Tinker because he's a shitty cop. He's a terrible cop. He's a crooked cop. He's a racist cop. Just because Swain's going to be on the show more often doesn't mean we have to see PC Tinker with her all the time. I object to this.
I think Swain is making Tinker a better cop.
I agreed, but she's never going to make him not crooked or racist.
No. I don't know if the show realizes that that's what Tinker is.
Crooked and racist?
Yeah. Certainly crooked with racist tendencies.
Racist overtones.
Swain very quickly notices the curtains and the blood splatter and calls forensics, and Tinker wants to talk about takeaways some more. At home, Bobby is like a hen in a hot girdle and can't get the satisfaction of pacing. I like that.
Yeah, that was funny.
I like that line. He's in his... that's not really a chair. What is it? There's a frame. He's got
a walker.
He's got his walker. But so he can't pace in it.
No.
It's a nice little line. Swain comes in with Tinker to get some details. Bobby explains about his conversation with Roy, except now he knows that Roy was just there to help Evelyn. And when he's telling the cops this, he's telling this very matter-of-factly. He's not trying to throw Roy under the bus or anything.
No, no.
Bobby also tells Swain about the ex-boyfriend and the bruises, but everything he says about Roy, like the tidying and paying racist Kelly's rent, just makes Roy sound more and more suspicious. And it gets worse when they go and speak to Roy and discover that he cleaned the flat up while wearing gloves and washed all the racist Kelly stuff and threw the rest out. Roy is under the impression that the interview that he had with the police went well when he talks to Bobby and Carla, and he gives himself a pat on the back by not getting rattled by their questions. He commends Bobby for not giving up on racist Kelly. Meanwhile, at racist Kelly's flat, Swain and Tinker are dressed like Hot Fuzz, while Kate Blanchett finds 200 quid under racist Kelly's mattress, which then puts into doubt the theory that she did a midnight flit. And then when they turn on the black light, the walls shine like a semen and blood encrusted sun.
It was a dude who found the $200, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it was Kate Blanchett that was in Hot Fuzz as the forensic person.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Olivia Colman has the best lines in the movie, though.
Nick Frost has the best lines in the movie.
It really is the best of the Cornetto trilogy.
It's one of the best movies ever made.
It is. I mean, it's no Casablanca. But
I don't think it's trying to be Casablanca.
Well, no,
but also, Casablanca is no Hot Fuzz.
They're both very funny movies.
Nobody says cunt in Casablanca.
Well, no, but
he's looking at you, cunt. Play again, you cunt. On Wednesday, Max and Bobby wait outside racist Kelly's flat as the Hot Fuzz forensics gather evidence. They go to Nina's Rolls to compare notes while Sabrina thinks Max should tell the cops about the not only but also fans account. Bobby doesn't see how it's relevant and thinks Sabrina should keep her mouth shut. Daniel and Bethany inexplicably turn up at number 8 looking for Gail, which gives Max an opportunity to quiz Daniel about the last time he saw racist Kelly. And Daniel's story doesn't jive with what racist Kelly had told Max. And after that, Daniel becomes super cagey about the dates. So Max, he goes to speak to Swain, who already knew about the not only but also fans thing thanks to Ryan.
That was hilarious. That Max is like, okay, I've got this thing that I need to tell you. I'm sorry I didn't tell you already, but it may help your investigation. She was on the OnlyFans. And Swain's like, yeah, thanks. We already knew about this. Mm-hmm. We're police officers.
Of course we knew about this. Of course you did.
We're police officers. I'm a detective. What are you thinking, pal?
But he also shares his suspicions of Daniel, who he thinks is racist Kelly's secret boyfriend. Daniel, he says, is sketchy as fuck. And he goes through Daniel's litany of blondes. Meanwhile, Bethany has called the cops to tell him about her poking off the right-wing hate group the other week. But when PC Tinker arrives, it's not to talk to Bethany.
Yeah, Bethany's like, wow, that was really quick. I just got off the phone with you guys.
It's to lift Daniel in for questioning.
Wah, wah.
This is the first that Bethany and Tinker have seen each other since she got back.
Yeah, we kind of assume. It's the first time we've seen the two of them together.
Because it used to be a thing.
Right, yeah, let's all forget that.
Well, it looked like they both had.
They seemed a little awkward with one another.
I didn't think they were.
A little.
Bethany's idea here is that her poking off the right-wing group has in some way put Racist Kelly in danger.
Right, because Racist Kelly is the one who gave those people her number.
Right. Yeah, so Daniel's lifted for questioning, and he thinks it's just because he was a tutor. And then the scenes with Swain questioning Daniel, I think, are among my favourite of Corey.
It's hilarious.
This year and maybe last year as well.
Oh my God.
Because right from the off, the questions she asks make Daniel sound like a predator, giving tutoring sessions for free, paying for her to take her exams, and having a history of allegations against him for tutoring young blonde women and paying sex workers.
And the sex cardigan comes up.
Well, the sex cardigan doesn't come up.
It does.
It doesn't. He doesn't mention that. Daniel decides that he might take that lawyer thing after all, so Adam turns up to listen to Daniel dig himself into a bigger, weirder hole as he explains how he didn't pay Nikki to get his hole. He paid her to wear Sinead's perfume and lie next to him. He doesn't mention the sex cardigan.
Right. He does mention the perfume, yeah, though, and that's hilarious. And he looks at Adam, and Adam's like, You just need to say it. You gotta say it, dude.
He insists that he never had a relationship like that, or not like that, with Racist Kelly. Everything seems to hinge on the activity of February 19, where Daniel says that he saw Racist Kelly in Nina's roles, but he didn't speak to her, and Maria can probably back that up because they spoke about Liam. Daniel is let go, and at home he gets a visit from Daisy, who has his back. He asks her to stay for a drink, but she has plans with Ryan, and yeah, he has plans with Bethany. And then
he doesn't really, though.
In a weird remontage, we see Roy, Bobby, Max and David, and Daniel and Bethany all in their own houses, all listening to the same news report. All
on listening the radio!
On their portable radios. Now, Roy, I can absolutely believe, listens to the radio.
Why aren't they gathered around their televisions? Can Corey not afford to record a news program?
But I guess it's conceivable that there's a local radio station.
Right.
Radio Weatherfield. There's probably not a local TV station.
TV Weatherfield?
There's no TV Weatherfield.
There's TV Weatherfield.
There's no TV Weatherfield.
Now.
But it was just weird that they drew attention to the fact that they were all gathered around their
radios.
The radios, like it was the 1940s.
Right, yeah. Because I'm sure that radio station has an app where you can listen to it on your phone.
Yeah, or just read the article.
Which is exactly what you're doing right now, listening to us. It's on your phone.
Probably on your phone, yeah.
I can see you.
Oh, Maria Menounos. How terrifying. On Friday, poor Daniel is not getting the support he wants from Ken and is now worried that Racist Kelly really has been killed and he's going to get done for it. He's sure, though, that Max is behind the tip-off. Meanwhile...
You think?
Meanwhile, in Nina's roles, Bobby is chatting about Daniel being questioned by... But Carla, Roy and Nina don't see that he could possibly have anything to do with it. And Roy promises to pop in to offer some support. Nina has found some horrible comments about Roy online. All those comments reckon that Roy looks like he's one for the watching, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Daniel approaches Max in the street to shout at him
and
about...
And they say that the cardigan that he's wearing...
The cardigan's a giveaway, yeah.
Right, which is ridiculous because has Grandpa Sheik just not hit the United Kingdom yet? Because...
Only barbers.
Because kids over here in America... They're all wearing cardigans.
Are they?
And suspenders.
Are they?
Yeah. Grandpa and Grandma Sheik is like really in right now. It's not just our kid.
Does she wear cardigans? She doesn't wear cardigans. I'll wear cardigans.
She wears cardigans sometimes.
Daniel approaches Max to shout him about Racist Kelly. Max admits to giving the cops his name, has no problem whatsoever admitting that, and reckons there's no smoke without fire, calling Daniel a perv, and Daniel's about to hit him. Ken, with his murdering gloves, intervenes and drags Daniel away. Daniel's like, I thought we were past this. And Max says to Daniel, you're definitely one for the watching. Max heads to Roy to see if he's interested in another press conference. He is, but Carla and Dina quickly try to gently motion Roy away from it until Debbie comes in and tells Roy about the Weather Gazette comment section. They all think Roy has had his fun with racist Kelly's corpse. Yeesh.
That's gross, man.
Roy wisely decides to remove himself from the situation, but Suki from the paper turns up and she's insistent that they have their little press conference after all. And as they argue about this, Swain arrives and nicks Roy for racist Kelly's murder. Dee Dee is present at the interview.
Great timing.
Where Swain confirms that they have no body, but they have found blood and bodily tissue. Roy explains the things that he threw out, including a broken chair and how he wore an apron and gloves. Swain asks about the cash under the mattress and it had Roy's fingerprints on it. He explains that that would have been her wages that he paid her. Swain asks if they were friends outside of work on social media or if he was aware of racist Kelly's sex work, and Roy just wasn't aware of any of it.
No.
But it doesn't surprise him, and he explains how she offered herself to him in the past and the circumstances that went along with it, thanks to her father and his friends. The fact that he volunteered this information...
Right, like, seriously. That should give Swain pause, but instead she kind of uses it as fuel, saying, why do you think this attractive young woman would offer herself to you, an unattractive old man?
Yes.
I like how Roy says, I abhor social media. And like how... You know, it's like, do you do any gaming with Kelly outside of school, Lauren, outside of work? And Roy's just looking at her like, what the hell are you talking about? Right. Yeah. And Dee Dee is more or less the same. Like, come on, look at this guy. What are you talking about? And see, this only works. This only works because Swain doesn't know Roy. Just exactly. Like it only worked when Bobby didn't know Roy.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's funny how PC Tinker doesn't really stand up for Roy. He kind of says something.
He tried a little bit. Yeah, he said, you know, this is Roy.
This
Roy
is
helps
very
people.
Much the way Roy is.
Yeah. But if you're Swain and you have no idea who Roy is, or maybe you've met him once.
Right.
To do with... maybe the Natasha murder or something like that because right. of the gun thing. If you've only met him very briefly, you don't really know anything about him. When you start asking him questions that right. he has had an active role in,
right?
His demeanor is going to make you suspicious of him.
Right, yeah.
She doesn't
Which
know Roy like we know Roy.
Right.
But Roy does have a violent side to him.
Yeah, we haven't really seen it.
Haven't seen it in a long time.
A very long time.
But yeah, it's a frustrating thing from a viewer's point of view when you know Roy, but
right.
This is why Swain works. It's because of things like this.
Yeah.
Swain asks what was wrong with the chair which had racist Kelly's blood in it, and they have reason to believe it was used as a weapon. And then she asks about the Johnny Bag wrapper that's got his fingerprints on that, and Roy has to suddenly change his story about how his gloves weren't on all the time after all because he picked it up with his fingers.
Right, because he thought he was done. He'd taken them off, and then he noticed the wrapper behind a cushion on the couch.
At this point, it's looking pretty bleak for Roy.
It does.
Dee Dee thinks the evidence is circumstantial and racist Kelly was a borderline criminal anyway, so Roy is allowed to go home on police bail and under curfew.
Swain?
Not Swain out. Back at the cafe, Roy refuses to behave like a guilty man, but then Nina shows him the Weather Gazette video of him being lifted by the police because Suki, of course, recorded that.
Right, but there were like boys across the street recording it as well.
He knows people think he's a freak. He blames the cardigan, but he says this too will pass. Privately, though, Dee Dee tells Carla she's seen folk get the death penalty for less. Roy might well be fucked. And that's how we end this week's episodes.
I feel like Daniel is far more guilty looking, don't you? Because Daniel has been involved in a case where a young girl was fixated on him and he was accused of being improper with her.
Daniel looks guilty, and Daniel is answering the questions angrily.
Right. He's answering questions angrily and haughtily, mm-hmm. you know, because he's Daniel. That's the way he talks.
Oh, as much as anybody can prove a negative.
Right. Yeah. Fuck you, Daniel. Don't talk to Swain like that, you asshole.
How dare you?
At least Roy is, like, calm and direct.
But is that the kind of demeanor of a murderer?
No.
Because you could argue that Daniel's reaction is the reaction of an innocent man who's shocked that he's been accused.
No, I feel like Roy is more an innocent man because he doesn't... Because he knows he's not guilty. He's answering questions directly and offering information. What do you think about the guy following Swain around who doesn't talk?
Was that the same guy that
it
followed...
It wasn't. Because that guy was white and had a mustache. This guy's not white and he doesn't have a mustache. But it's like, you know, he says nothing. He will sometimes look at Swain in a knowing way, but he says nothing.
There needs to be two people in the room.
Yeah.
From the police side of it.
And yet, there have been lots of times where there hasn't been two people in the room.
I think once there's a lawyer present, I think maybe I'm wrong. But anyway, Swain is... I feel like I'm just enthusing about Swain all the time, but there's a moment where Adam comes in and she says, do you want to introduce yourself for the tape? And he says... Adam Barlow from Barlow Financial Services and...
Financial services.
Legal services, but also financial services, if you like. John. And my client is willing to cooperate to the maximum extent. Well, isn't that nice?
Isn't that nice? Isn't it?
Or, I'm pleased to hear it or whatever.
Shouldn't Dee Dee's name be in there now that they're partners?
They've probably not got the paperwork drawn up yet.
Hmm.
I am absolutely loving this. This is...
Do you think she's dead?
No. I think this has turned out to be a fabulous storyline. And who'd have thunk that Racist Kelly would be the most interesting when she's not in it? This is turned into a whodunit.
Yeah.
And I didn't see it coming.
And
I love how we don't know...
If she's alive or dead.
And we don't even know if she's alive or dead. And everything's kind of pointing to the fact that she's dead. And I really don't think that she is.
I think she murdered her attacker. And that's why she took off.
That would make sense. I could believe that. But the way this is going, and this is another week where she hasn't been found, and I've no reason to believe that she'll be found next week. This is just going to drag on a little bit. And this is becoming...
More interesting.
A very, very interesting storyline. And I love how it's just grown so smoothly from her looking to get into Bethany's bag. That's kind of been the catalyst for the whole thing.
Right.
And her losing her job and all that sort of stuff. And the way that Roy's trying to do a favour for...
Right.
Evelyn, which he does mention.
Right, yeah.
And he'd very clearly draw the line about what he was doing to help Racist Kelly and what he was doing to help
Evelyn.
And I loved that.
Why hasn't Swain brought Evelyn in to corroborate Roy's story? That's a conversation I'd love to see. Evelyn versus Swain. That would be terrific.
So the organic way that this has grown with somebody who, let's face it, I thought before that Roy was behaving a little strangely about this, and I thought Roy knew where she was and just wasn't saying it because his mannerisms kind of changed a little bit.
But, he's just being Roy.
But the fact, well, he wasn't just being Roy, otherwise I wouldn't have noticed. He was being a little bit different from usual. But the fact that he was doing this favour that's kind of made him kind of complicit... Daniel was doing what he thought was a favour for Racist Kelly, and that's made him look a bit complicit as well. I think we need one more potential culprit in this to
nobody
make this
else given,
super, super interesting.
Nobody else has given her money, though. Just Roy and Daniel. The only other person who might be complicit, I guess, would be Bobby. But Bobby's not going to murder her and drag her away.
The only thing that I can think to add into this is that the other week, when Joel revealed that he was married, and I was suddenly like, do you know what? I don't think that's true. I think there's something weird going on here with Joel. I wonder if Joel's behind it all.
Would you just leave the poor man alone? He was just married.
Again, I'm still not convinced.
Joel does not make sense at all.
Well, we don't have all the information to make it make sense, but it would be a thing that would be a secret that he wouldn't be wanting to tell Dee Dee about, certainly. And Dee Dee is involved in this storyline, so.
And let's remember that the secret boyfriend was somebody that she already knew, or that she knew before, someone she'd had a relationship with before in some capacity.
And I feel like that has to be somebody we know.
And if there's one thing we know about Joel, he ain't no racist.
I don't think he's racist either.
But yeah, it is a good... It's made Racist Kelly more interesting. It still isn't redeeming her in any way.
No, not at all.
And I find that very interesting.
I still have a huge problem with that.
Yeah, I have a problem with it, but I also find it interesting that they didn't try to redeem her before potentially murdering her.
Mm.
So we're concerned about a character we don't care about.
Well, we're not really concerned about... Well, I'm not really concerned about her. I'm concerned about Roy.
Well, yeah. Which I think is very interesting that we're all concerned about Roy.
Mm-hmm.
Not Racist Kelly.
No. Still the only person that cares about Racist Kelly is Bobby.
And Max. Although it does kind of seem like a part of Max only cares about Racist Kelly because he gets to wind Daniel up again.
I agree. No, this has been a really great part of this week. And I love how they gave it so much of the time of this week. I mean, everything that we've talked about really has been a secondary, tertiary, whatever storyline. So putting all the emphasis on this, I think, has really worked. And it's been really interesting and quite compelling.
Yes.
So that was the week that was Coronation Street. Helen, tell me, what was your moment of the week?
It was a good week.
It was a good week.
There are a couple of moments that I think were pretty good. What is your moment of the
week? It's without a doubt, it's Swain interviewing Daniel. I've
watched
that.
You don't want to give it to Dylan admitting that he wanted to be popular? You don't want to give it to Simon in court?
No, I didn't really buy that. I didn't buy the changed cheery Simon at all. Simon doesn't really suit cheery all that well.
You don't want to give it to Nick and Leanne deciding just not to get married?
No, I think Dylan on a different week, I thought that was a great moment. But Swain just...
Sticking it to Daniel.
Just sticking it to Daniel. That's got to be our...
Moment of the week.
Our moment of the week.
Boring moment of the week.
Archery.
The fact that Joseph might be doing archery and have a novel written about it by Lino Shriver is...
Boring moment of the week.
They talk about it too much, and it's like, there's no way this kid has ever been interested in archery.
If he pulls back that, he's going to fly back.
It's going to be like Looney Tunes. He's going to be the arrow.
Yes. So, last week, you gave it a 6, I gave it a 7. What's your score this week out of 10?
7.
I think
it's a better week this week.
I think an 8 for me. I really enjoyed it this week. The Racist Kelly storyline is an absolute peach, and I'm loving it, and I hope for more of that next week. All right, this episode was brought to you with thanks to our friends of the podcast: Daisy, French Helen, Pickles, DT, Trisha, Wendy, Noel, Canadian Helen, Christy, and Shandy. If you know what a radio is, write in to describe one to us. We're the talk of the street at gmail.com and we're at Corey Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Threads and Blue Sky. You can shout me and Helen a coffee or become a friend of the podcast by heading to ko-fi.com, that's ko-fi.com/thetalkofthestreet. Check out the clicky clicky section of voggle.co.uk for links to our merch store and YouTube channel. And if you're so inclined, please leave a rating and a review on the iTunes or your podcast provider of choice. And be sure to check out our pop culture sister podcast, The List of Lists.
You'll love it!
Thanks. Not guaranteed. Thanks for making it to the end of another episode. And we will be back next week with more
Talk of the Street.
The Talk of the Street.
Bye.
Cheerio.